This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. I get to visit with a gentleman who is in Great Britain today, Alan White, who has written a book titled Savannah and the Soldier. And I welcome Alan to the program today. Welcome, sir.
Hello.
Very good to visit with you. Tell me a little of this story. You have around 255 pages. This is a novel, I'm guessing. No, it's not a nonfiction.
It is a novel, and I might just read you what the U.S. Review of Books said.
Yes.
In describing it.
Loved
it. Well, a little bit from it. It says it offers a fast-paced suspense with romance at its core, and neatly ties each character together for a smooth ending. Secrets, unanswered questions, and enough twists to keep readers intrigued will create a wish for more from Alan White.
That's a wonderful, wonderful accommodation. Now, you spent some time in the RAF, correct? And have a little military background.
Well, 33 years.
33 years. Well, that is a little bit of a background. What was the inspiration behind this particular story, Savannah and the Soldier?
Well, I lived in Cyprus for 9 years. I knew that island for 30 because I went first of all in 1957 with a fighter squadron, went out for 3 months to keep a little bit of air defense going out there.
Mm.
And I eventually decided I'd want to go and live in Cyprus after I retired from the Royal Air Force. And I started writing by looking at my old logbooks and drawing up a book based on my 33 years in the Air Force. That was my first venture into writing. Then I wrote what was really a sequel to that, A Sojourn in Cyprus, which was a story about my 9 years there.
Mm.
And I got to like writing enough, and I thought, well, it's a good way of keeping the mind active as one ages. And so I embarked on a novel, Savannah and the Soldier. And I'm keeping on because I'm now halfway through a sequel to Savannah.
And Savannah was the wife of Sir Charles Hunt. He was the officer that she was married to. I guess he was an officer, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
Yes, he was a retired soldier.
Mm-hmm. Retired. And what was the age of the main characters of your story?
Well, Savannah was 30, and Brigadier Ian Moncrief was 59 when they first met. Charles was in his mid-40s.
And what would you say is the controversial aspect of your story? I know that there are some twists and turns that have to do with romance.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole mixture of adventure in there, but I would call it basically a love story between this young woman and the 59-year-old man. A very unlikely liaison, but it developed from a first meeting where she thought he was a bit of a pompous ass.
Uh-huh.
And conceived a plot with three of her friends to knock the stuffing out of him. But I'm afraid that didn't work because she decided in the end he was not a pompous ass. They got to like each other, they got to love each other, and of course it wrecked two marriages.
Oh my.
I didn't wreck Savannah's marriage because Charles conveniently killed himself by smashing the car over a cliff.
Oh my. Now, did you know anyone in your days in the military that might have fit this personality, this character that you have created?
Well, one would be foolish to say that one's not basing characters on something. I did try to be as fictional as possible, but of course you think of people that you've known over the years, and a little bit of them get themselves into characterization. There's no one specific. I wouldn't say that there is anyone who could identify themselves as any of the main characters.
When you began writing this novel, did you have a particular goal in mind besides completion, of course? Did you have an audience in mind, one that you felt would really find this an intriguing read?
Well, that's difficult because I rather hoped I could aim for a sort of middle-aged, no, I don't mean middle-aged, I mean anything from, say, 40 up to, or 30 up to old age. I wasn't aiming at the youngsters. It's not a shallow love story. It's a rather serious one. And so I think it would appeal across the spectrum from, 30 to 70, 80.
And character-driven is your focus on this particular story.
Yeah, it is.
You've been awarded the Trafford Seal of Excellence. How did that feel, and why did that come about?
Well, it came out of the blue. I was rather pleased about that. I hope it is going to give some added appeal to my book.
If you were to introduce this book to someone that doesn't know that you are a prolific author and have decided that this is going to be your occupation, your preoccupation, how would you do so? How would you introduce this book?
Well, I'd say having taken the easy start with memoirs, I decided to try my hand at a novel. And that's what Savannah and the Soldier turned out to be. I wouldn't call myself a prolific author, just because I'm embarking on my fourth book. But who knows? I may keep going until I drop off the perch.
Well, that's an amazing fact that you are and have decided to become an author. When did that desire start in your particular personality? Was this something you've had an interest in doing as a child and on through your education, or is it something that's been recent?
No, it's something that I've had in the back of my mind for many years, but I had a very busy life in the Royal Air Force. Had no time when I was flying, had no time when I began to climb up the rank ladder. So it's really something that I was able to turn my mind to when I retired. Oh, I wrote lots of papers, reports, presentations, and all that sort of thing, very technical stuff throughout my career. But it took a little bit of peace and quiet in retirement to get me started on the book writing.
You talk about one of your characters in chapter one. It says he was already late, getting later as he looked for the name of the restaurant among a confusing and closely packed array of neon signs competing for his attention.
Yeah.
As he drove slowly along Poseidon Avenue, the road running parallel to the coastline southeast from the harbor, trying as he did to peer left and right, he cursed the hazards created by young drivers cruising approximately, apparently aimlessly along the bright lights. And so the story begins. You have captured our attention by painting a picture of the environment that this character is in.
Yes, that picture is very clear in my mind. That Cyprus had a very good tourist industry until 1974 when the Turks invaded, or as the Turks would say, intervened. And that just split the island in half. The best tourist area was in the Turkish bit. It was left empty, derelict, but they kick-started themselves in the south in 1974, and Paphos, which had been a very quiet little backwater, suddenly found itself developing rapidly into a holiday resort. And It was a bit of a frontier town in a sense, with developers jumping on what you could describe as a gold rush bonanza, stuffing up hotels all over the place. And Cato Paphos, which is on the coast, very, very ancient place, became all neon lights and hordes of kids running about.
You still miss Cyprus, then?
I do. I miss it.
Yes.
I miss it. I'm very happy to live in a warm climate. And I explain in Sojourn in Cyprus why we left, why we came back to this country. It had a variety of reasons. But I do miss Cyprus. I think it's a lovely environment, a little bit third worldish. But, and of course, there's appeal that it was for quite a few years a British colony, and it is still a residual Britishness about it, which makes the holidaymaker from the United Kingdom feel quite at home in it.
Wonderful. As an author of this book, how long did it take Alan to complete?
Well, I haven't been under any pressure to complete, so I didn't sit down at 8 o'clock in the morning and write until who knows when.
Right.
I wrote for an hour or two at a time, sat my teeth about it, thought about it, amended it, changed it. And so I suppose it took me all of a year and a half to write.
That's not a long period. I have had some authors that have taken as much as 20 years to complete their first book. So this is not your first, but it's your first novel of its type. Were there challenges in reflecting on Cyprus and in integrating that environment into the storyline?
Well, Cyprus is ingrained in my mind, and I had no difficulty remembering things. And I have a lot of friends there. And when I needed to refine some of my memories, I got onto them in Cyprus, Cypriots, just to help me out if the memory was slightly fuzzy.
Right. What would you say is the most exciting scene that you have created in Savannah and the Soldier?
Well, it would be difficult to choose. I think I'd first start dwell on the developing love between Savannah and Ian, and the first time they actually decide that they are for each other and go to bed together. That, I think, was exciting. But then there's the moment when Charles, angry because another character, Jane Scott, has confronted him in a busy bar and told him about his wife's affair with Ian. The moment when he drags her out, takes her home, punches her hard in a fit of anger, she falls over, dislocates her back on a low teak coffee table.
It sounds a little bit like BBC nighttime movie of the week, or maybe a series. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to think it might appeal to some movie maker, but I don't think there's enough conflict in it, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Movie makers like a conflict every 2 or 3 minutes.
This is true.
They think that something needs to be resolved. But I suppose that could be rewritten if someone was going to do a screenplay.
Well, love and relationships are always a big, big item for readers and also for movie makers. Alan, where can my listeners get copies of Savannah and the Soldier?
Well, I suppose the cheapest resource source is Amazon. But Trafford, very happy to sell the books.
And can they find you also on the web? Do you have a website developed yet?
Yes, I have.
And what is the address there? Do you remember what that is?
No, I don't. I'd well, have to look it up.
They can look for you, though, by your name, Alan, A-L-A-N.
Alan and White.
And yep. White, W-H-I-T-E. The title of the book, again, is Savannah and the Soldier. This should be a great read for people who want just a story that will take them away from the everyday life that they're leading now and export them to Cyprus. So thank you, sir, for sharing your background story on this book and your other adventures that will be happening in the future. We hope to talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Alan. For Trafford Publishing, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi everybody, this is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station. Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is titled Transformation, The Servant's Heart, A Life of Faith. And our author who joins me from Idaho in the United States is John F. Beer. Mr. Beer, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
This is a 270-page manuscript book work. Why did you decide that you wanted to share this story, The Transformation of Servant's Heart, A Life of Faith?
Well, several years ago, I had been asked to give a lesson in a church cell group that we belong to, and I did that, and the topic was anxiety in a Christian life. And then a few weeks after that, our pastor asked me to fill in for him on a week that he was going to be gone. So I expanded that lesson into a sermon. And then in a few days, I got an email from an associate pastor who's also a licensed counselor for mental problems. And he told me that he was really thankful that what I told him was helpful to him. And I thought, that's weird because I'm just a layman. He's a counselor. But anyway, that kind of motivated me to expand on that. And then I added another subject of love to it and came to the conclusion that maybe I could write a book. And it was pretty strange because after I had written part of the second and third part, I went back to see about the first part and what I'd written again. And I couldn't find it. It was gone from my computer.
Really?
And I looked in my file and there was nothing there. And then I remembered that I'd given a copy of it to two people to read and I'd never heard from them. And I got a hold of them and they both had either tossed them away or lost them, one or the other. And I was kind of discouraged. But then I got to looking in my file again and I found the notes for the original lesson, and turned out to be a blessing because I was able to do a better job the second time.
You deal with anxiety in your beginning chapters, and why do you feel it's necessary for, or why do you feel it happens in the life of people of faith that anxiety is sometimes a challenge for them?
Well, from my own experience and from observation, I know that Christians worry about things, and I think basically it's just a lack or a weakened faith or a lack of faith or a misunderstanding of what God said in the Bible about it. There's, I think, if I recall right, 366 places in the Bible where it says, don't be afraid. And Jesus always said, don't be afraid. And when people were, he said, where's your faith?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all need a little help in that respect.
One of the scriptures that came to my attention or came to my mind, and I am also a person who has a grounding in faith, cast all your cares on him because he cares for you.
Absolutely.
What type of things do you think that people of faith, people who are called Christians. Why do they, what is it that they worry about in particular? Are they worried about their future? Are they worried about their past? What is it that haunts them?
Well, I think you've hit it there a couple of times. We worry about the future, and why can we worry about what we don't even know about? And why do we worry about things that a great percentage of the time never happen? And then, in my own experience, I think back about some of the bad parts of my life, and I worry about that, but what good does that do, you know?
Right. There's a lot of things that human, just as being a human, we think about our past and decisions we've made and worry about those and have concerns. Sometimes we try to fix things from 20 years ago that there's nothing can be done. They're already part of our past and part of our history. As you began to write this, how long did it take, John, to complete your book?
Oh, I think it was about 5 years total.
5 years total. Part of the chapters, just for my listeners and for the audience, anxiety and anguish versus faith and freedom is your first chapter. Then you deal with what is anxiety, how we deal with it. And then you transform that into an effort or a work on love. You focus on love, how love transforms and how important that is to the human faith walk. What do you feel is the underlying message besides just the practical how-tos that will come through as people read and study your material?
Well, I hope that it will cause them to think about their own life and their relationship to Christ, and how strong is it, or do they even have one? Because I think a lot of people consider themselves Christians, and they're really not. I've spent years in that respect. And so self-examination and then asking God to examine us, as David did, to me is a very positive thing. And even though some people may criticize me on that, I believe it's a necessity in our lives to strengthen our faith.
Would you consider this a how-to book? Would you consider it a book that can be used as a study guide for small groups? Who's your target audience?
I think just about anybody that calls himself a Christian. I really don't want it to be thought of as a how-to guide. I don't think much of those. But I do think it is a reason or a step maybe to turn to God's word and see what it says. And my word is not important in comparison to his, but it could be a way to step from one place to the other, a better place.
In introducing this to someone, perhaps a pastor or a Bible study leader, how would you do so? What would you suggest would be the reason they should buy a copy of your book?
Well, it's amazing because since it's been published, I have seen the same subjects brought up time and time again, including my own church. And so maybe it would be a help to a pastor to see what I have to say and my opinion and so forth and how I view the scriptures. And first of all, I think that instead of worrying about things, the church ought to be out dealing with these things in other people's lives and showing them that there is a solution if they just turn to God. And I think the last segment of the book on humility and pride is probably I wouldn't say it's the foundation, but it's pretty close. Love, of course, is the foundation of God's gospel and of Him. But then if you're full of pride, you don't have much left and much room left for love.
What is your observation of I notice you mentioned the Sermon on the Mount, which is a very well-known passage of Scripture in Matthew. What is your takeaway from that particular Sermon on the Mount?
I saw it as a lesson in humility.
And which of the scriptures stands out to you, or the concepts?
Well, probably the Beatitudes is a good introduction to it, and then he follows that up with more practical things that as we live our lives, we apply them to how we live.
John, as you wrote this, how long did you say you spent about a year and a half on this. Were there challenges in getting this completed? You mentioned one, that the first version of your introductory chapters had been missing. Were there other challenges that you had to overcome in order to get this completed?
Well, I guess the main thing that I think of right now is that quite often I would come to a point where I would say to myself, I need a word, but I don't know what it is, or I need an idea and I can't think. I guess it's writer's block or something like that.
Right.
And finally I concluded, well, why are you trying to do this yourself? Why don't you ask God? And I started to pray every time I had that problem, and he never failed, not one time. I always ended up with the right word, I think, or an idea that I could use.
Has this inspired you to...
Or scripture.
Yes. Has this inspired you to do a follow-up book, a sequel to what you have penned here?
Well, not really. I may in the future, but right now I'm so busy trying to finish this up that I haven't got much time to think ahead.
What type of feedback are you getting from those who have read it and been introduced to transformation?
I've had nothing but positive response so far.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, this is a great effort, 270 pages. You've done a great amount of research and also shared some practical application to overcoming anxiety and some other issues that Christians are facing today. The title of the book is Transformation, The Servant's Heart, A Life of Faith. John Beer has been my guest. John, where do we get copies of your book?
I can mail them. They will be available in Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And I also have a web site that's just been completed. I don't know how that's going to work yet, but that is going to be available soon.
All right.
And I suppose... Well, I don't know. They're working out a plan for me, and I don't know what all that is yet.
Most of the listeners can find you under your name, John, J-O-H-N, last name Beer, B-E-E-R, B-E, that's double E's, I'm sorry, Beer. And just like the adult liquid beverage that some participate in, they can find you that way. But mostly
yeah.
By this book, Transformation. The Servant's Heart, A Life of Faith. John, thank you for sharing your story and sharing the background information about this book. They can do a search online and find you and certainly keep in touch that way. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled, It's All About Me, an interactive guide to a happier, more fulfilling, and successful life. I like the title. I also know a lot of people that maybe don't even need the book by its title because it's all about them. Our author joining me from California is Gerald M. Reike. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Thank you, Jay. I'm happy to be here.
And now this is a challenging topic in some regard. Now, why did you feel that it was a good idea to stick your nose into It's All About Me?
Well, some years ago, I started hosting a study group based on a book that I was really enjoying called It's The Artist's Way by Ms. Cameron. And at that point, I was also going through some practitioner studies with the Center for Spiritual Living, and I was really doing some soul searching of my own for what I thought would be a good direction in my life, because at that point it was kind of all about me. But I was also looking for something a little bit more than I was experiencing. But that I think is a natural thing for everybody to be experiencing all the time, because there's always more. There's always a yearning for more. So I continued my own studies, continued to working with other people, and then I realized, you know, people are having a hard time recognizing how incredible they are, because I kept running into people who were having issues with their past or their perceptions or their beliefs based on what everybody else was telling them about themselves. And that's really not the way to approach things if you want to be successful. Yes, it's great to have wonderful feedback from other people. You know, a little stroking feels really good when you get compliments from other people, but ultimately, it's how you feel about yourself and how you approach life in your own that moves you forward into something that you know that you like. I mean, everybody's magnificent. Everybody, in my opinion, everybody is uniquely magnificent. Everybody has knowledge and individual talents that are not like anybody else in the world. Everybody also carries beliefs and opinions about themselves, you know, their worth or lack thereof, and these have been developed over time by hearing no a lot, or
yes,
you can't. So my focus, the reason for writing the book was to address that, because I understand those issues, and I understand how that can really have a terrible effect on people in moving forward with their own lives. So what I wanted to do was get people in touch with themselves, get the me who's reading the book to engage in a self in a retrospective of themselves and a discovery, so that they could find out, where is all this stuff coming from that's affecting me by what is it that in my past, what is it that I'm doing, what is it that is happening that is keeping me stuck in a cycle of the same thing happening over and over and over again.
Yeah, negative input.
About,
right.
Exactly. I mean, we all hear the story about people who keep running into the same, you know, they're looking for somebody to be important in their lives or for that special person, but they keep running into the same kind of person that they really don't want to end up with, and it's because they've developed a cycle, and the cycle is based on perceptions. Perceptions are based on their experiences, and their experiences are based on what they've allowed to come into their lives. So it just kind of perpetuates itself. So this is a means of taking people through that retrospective, so they can learn to live a life of joy and to have fun along the way, and to be wonderfully unique and quirky the way they're supposed to be, because, you know, nobody is alike.
And celebrate who they are. Absolutely.
Exactly. You and I have a lot in common, but I haven't walked in your shoes. You haven't walked in mine.
Right.
And the experiences, although they might be similar, are completely different depending on the individual.
Your book is sort of a how-to book, not just a narrative as such, but you also have pages where an individual reading your book can take those concepts and express them and in writing in your book as well. Is that correct?
Yes. It is really an interactive guide, meaning there are exercises for you to contemplate on and think about and then do, and hopefully open up your eyes to, or the individual's eyes, to what those things are that have been keeping them from moving forward in the past.
You take them through things like your first date. You ask them to reflect on that and to comment. Your first success. You talk about your first failure, which I'm sure every human on the planet has something they can reflect on that may have been an oops in their life. Maybe it was a failure in their mind. How do you address that? How do they take that negativity and turn it around? What is your suggestion for them?
By just being cognizant of it, understanding that there's a difference between living from the past and learning from the past. If a lot of people are just kind of stuck in that that warning system that says, hey, you've been here before, you know what's going to happen if you try it again. But taking that and going beyond it and realizing that, yeah, stuff happened in the past, what can I learn from that, and then let go of it so that I can kind of break this cycle from occurring again. It's not intended to make a person relive all of the stuff that happened back then. It's more of a critical thinking avenue where you recognize what happened, and when it comes up again, you can thereby recognize, oh, I've been there before, I'm not going to take that route, I'm going to walk in a different way.
You've shared some comments from other motivational speakers like Robert Schuller. What would you attempt if you knew you could not fail? A very thought-provoking idea.
Exactly. It's a very thought-provoking, and that's the intent. The intent is to open the individual up to the limitless possibilities, the incredible life that they could have if they would just allow themselves to move forward from where they are. And I say from where they are because that's the only place you can start, is where you are right now, and coming to grips with where I am now versus where I wish I were is a big difference, because wishing that you are someplace else is only going to get you that same wishing that I was someplace else, and again, wishing that I was someplace else, because that's what you're focusing on. You get pretty much what you focus on. If you are consistently saying, I'm a horrible person, guess what? You're not going to get out of that horrible person syndrome until you recognize how incredibly wonderful and unique you really are, and realize that in your own eyes, and not just in allowing somebody else to rule your life because of whatever stuff they're going through.
Share with my listeners the importance of dreaming, or the aspect of creating a dream, or your dream, perhaps career, your dream partner, whatever it might be in life. How did that impact your life as a dreamer?
Dreaming is great, but you have to take it one step further than just dreaming. Which is why I talk about meditation, visualization, and journaling in the book, and take people through those steps and actually have them participate in those tools. When you dream, you know, people daydream. They dream about better things, better times, more. And it's a natural thing to do because there's always more. There's always a yearning within oneself to learn more, have more, be more fulfilled, be more happy, be more successful, move forward into something that's new and exciting. And that's what life is all about, is trying to get to that next step of new and exciting. But when people daydream, they tend to wake up from it and go, oh, well, it was nice to dream, and then move on with their life as normal. But if they go beyond that and allow themselves to visualize it, and when I say visualize, I'm not talking about just daydreaming. I'm talking about actually physically, almost physically seeing yourself and experiencing yourself where you want to be. It's like, Abraham Hicks is big with the public right now, and her take on visualization is putting yourself out there in a higher vibrational state and seeing it, feeling it, touching it, actually experiencing it through visualization so that you can get yourself into that vibrational state and let your life will catch up with you. And that's basically the same way. When you get excited about something, then it's in the forefront of your mind. When you experience something that has really positive connotations or aspects to it, then that's in the forefront of your mind, and that's what you'll start looking for, and that's what you'll start attracting, and that's what you'll start moving towards, gravitating towards, and that will bring you to closer to where you want to be. It's a wonderful tool. In fact, there are studies that were done that I mentioned in the book. There were studies done some years ago at a university with a basketball coach who decided he was going to experiment with his team. He had half of his team practice an hour a day on free throws, nothing but free throws. He had the other half of his team not practice the free throws, but visualize themselves making the free throws for an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the period, it was a very close, result between the two. The people that actually did the practice on the free throws increased their accuracy, and the people who just visualized it and saw themselves and felt it happening and touched it, and, you know, touched the basketball and saw it going into the basket, they increased their proficiency almost as much.
Incredible.
So it's really an incredible tool. It's really a valuable tool to have, and if you utilize it, then there's no stopping the wondrous things that can happen.
Gerald, how would you recap for my listeners? They're not familiar perhaps with your work or with your passion. How would you recap for them the story or the content of It's All About Me, 104 pages?
This is a let me start off by saying how I would introduce this book to a good friend of mine, and essentially which I've done, and it's an interesting approach, because there's that friendship, there's that relationship between you and the other individual, just as there's a relationship between the reader and the writer that develops. And basically, this book is a gift. It was written to help answer all those questions about life's purposes, fulfillment, success, and getting past those blocks that have been in the way of moving forward. People have, I mean, there's a myriad of self-help books. There's a myriad of self-help gurus who really talk about generalities. But generalities are fine, but it really doesn't get down to the aspect of the individual and how helping the individual move through their own process completely different than anyone else. Because again, nobody has walked in my shoes. Nobody has thought my thoughts. Nobody has felt my feelings. There are a lot of similarities. I mean, my wife and I can be in the same room and see the same thing and feel the same way, but it's completely different with the individual, and it's unique to that individual. And that's what I want to get across to anybody who's looking for more, who's looking for a way to get past where they are and into a more successful life. I mean, we all want the same thing. We all want to be happy. We all want more. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's the purpose of our being here, in my opinion, is to experience, is to have a joyful life while we're here and to expand ourselves in every way possible. But to do that, we have to get past all the crap that has been holding us back and allow ourselves to move forward. And that's what this book intends to do.
Jerry, thank you for writing this book. It's 104 pages, not a long read, but has some wonderful helps in it. The title again is It's All About Me, An Interactive Guide to a Happier, More Fulfilling and Successful Life. Our author from California, Gerald M. Reiche. And Reiche is spelled R-E-I-C-H-E for those of you who want to do a search online and find Gerald and his other works, which I'm sure will be coming in the future. Are you planning to do a follow-up to this book, Gerald?
Always.
Fabulous.
Yes, I am.
All right. Look forward to visiting with you in the future. And where can we get copies of your book?
You can get this through BalboaPress.com. You can get it through Barnes & Noble, on Amazon, any bookstore. You can also pick it up as an ebook in the same areas.
Are you planning a website to share additional thoughts with our listeners?
Yes, website is JerryReiche.com.
And Jerry is spelled how?
Jerry with a G. Yeah, GerryReiche.com.
Fabulous. Jerry, thank you for joining me today. Look forward to visiting with you in the future, and best of luck with this book. It's All About Me.
Thank you, Jay. It's been a pleasure.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.